And a credit union, by its nature, is a cooperative.
Okay.
And it is owned by the people who have accounts there for the benefit of people who have accounts there. There's no shareholder dividends. There's no build your credit union and sell it for a profit to the credit union down the street. That's one of the key differences, is that my car loans at a credit union, my money costs money. It's kind of the similar products, but it's really that philosophy behind it, which many times can result in better fees, lower rates, or in this case, we're paying you higher deposit rates, but also the philosophy and the service level that goes into it.
Welcome to the CRE Project Podcast, where investors, developers, brokers, and real estate entrepreneurs join together to grow, build, and execute on experience and strategies within the commercial real estate industry. We sit down with the top pros and leaders within the commercial real estate field and gain knowledge and insight from their success. We're glad you're here and look forward to connecting with you. You can find the CRE Project on all major podcast platforms, along with YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram.
Hey everyone, welcome to today's show. We welcome Mark Ritter on the show with us today. Really excited to have him on to discuss credit unions in detail. Mark is the CEO of MBFS and is an expert when it comes to credit unions and business lending. Right now, his primary role at MBFS is overseeing the strategy of helping credit unions assist members with different needs and consulting and how they can deliver services to their members. So has a lot of experience when it comes to, again, credit unions and lending in the commercial real estate space. Really enjoyed our conversation with Mark. Found it very insightful and resourceful, and we know you will too. So without further ado, here we go with Mark. Hey Mark, good morning. Thanks so much for joining me this morning on the CRE Project Podcast. Thankful that you're here and excited to jump into the topic of lending and credit unions. So thanks again for taking the time.
Clayton, thanks for the invitation. Looking forward to the conversation.
Yeah, my pleasure. My pleasure. So starting off, give us some background on, who you are and how you got to where you're at today.
Sure. My name is Mark Ritter. I'm the CEO of MBFS. That stands for Member Business Financial Services, which is a mouthful. So we just say MBFS. And as I speak to you, I am in suburban Philadelphia in Bucks County, Pennsylvania.
East Coast.
Where like many people, I am working out of my home after we downsized our office. And what our company does, it's kind of a unique thing. We are owned by 12 credit unions and work with about 80 credit unions nationwide. And the only thing we do is help credit unions put together commercial loans and help investors get the financing they need from credit unions. And the easiest way to think about us is that instead of all of these credit unions, which sometimes can be small institutions or they're relatively new to credit union business lending, instead of all of them going and building some infrastructure with all their own salespeople and software systems and credit analysis and documentation people, what the credit union's a collaborative industry, and they've built companies like us nationwide so they could offer the services and financing cheaper, easier, more efficient for everybody.
Very interesting. So I guess, thanks for giving that background. Let's start out with explaining to the audience, what is a credit union exactly? How would you define a credit union?
Sure. And growing up, I knew my father at the factory he was at. He was a part of a credit union, and he just described it as the place that he went when he needed money. Yeah. And it was for the employees of the factory. And credit unions have evolved a lot since then. And when you drive past a credit union, you see an ATM, you see teller lines, they have signs up for car loans, and it looks pretty similar to a bank. But the biggest difference is when you uncover what the credit union is compared to your local bank, whether it be a community bank or a large regional national bank. And a credit union, by its nature, is a cooperative.
Okay.
And it is owned by the people who have accounts there for the benefit of people who have accounts there. There's no shareholder dividends. There's no build your credit union and sell it for a profit to the credit union down the street. That's one of the key differences, is that my car loans at a credit union, my money costs money. It's kind of the similar products, but it's really that philosophy behind it, which many times can result in better fees, lower rates, or in this case, we're paying you higher deposit rates, but also the philosophy and the service level that goes into it. And that's where I always make the joke around that said, if I went to a bank, I'd probably get fired in a week, because I like to be a friendly guy. I'm a conversational guy, and credit unions tend to do what's best for their clients due to that not-for-profit financial cooperative viewpoint of the world. Now, years ago, one of the reasons credit unions weren't involved in commercial lending is it was pretty heavily restricted up until 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. It just wasn't an option for people. And also, if you go back in time, there was triple the number of banks in America. And pretty much every street corner in town had First National Bank of whatever your hometown was.
Yeah.
And there was plenty of institutions, and credit unions kind of did their things. But over the years, with the consolidation of the industry and expansion of credit unions, it's really come full circle where people had an account at that credit union. And nobody is protesting in the streets against their local credit union. Generally, they like it and they have a favorable impression. Well, you went out, you started a business, and you bought some properties. And what's the best place to get your first loan from, or to build that relationship? It's where you already have a good relationship.
Absolutely.
So it really kind of evolved from that and has grown over the years.
Interesting. So what are the key advantages towards using a credit union versus a bank when it comes to commercial real estate lending?
Good question. And I always put it in terms of twofold. And the first is, many times that terms that you can get in the nuts and bolts of your deal are more flexible. And credit unions don't lend in a box of, here's the deal, here's what we have, here's the lender that we have, and poof, you're either going to fit or you're not, or you go to somebody else down the street. And we've all been there and had those experiences. So, and for example, a good example is a federal credit union, by statute, can't charge a prepayment penalty on anything.
Interesting. I did not know that.
So now, 2 years ago, when you could get your commercial real estate loan for 3%, that might not have been as important for people. But because we all knew you weren't going to get much lower and refinance it out.
Yeah.
Today's world, where we're in a rising rate market, well, let's hope rates soften over the next 4 to 5 years at some point. And with that lack of a prepayment penalty, you can refinance to a lower rate, negotiate with your credit union at a lower rate, and put it down there. The other piece is that I would say is credit unions, because of that structure, are much more approachable and conversation oriented. Financials are financials. Mm-hmm. Good credits are good credits. Bad credits are bad credits. those are the easy people who are at the 10% of the either end of the spectrum. But for many people, you want to have a conversation with your lender. You want to have a conversation with the people making decisions behind your loan so they understand you. Particularly for that first loan or two, you're going to have questions about them. You're going to want to understand their process, and they're going to want to understand you. You know, I always say it's like an eighth grade dance. Everybody's staring at each other and nobody really knows what to do.
Yeah.
But at the credit union, you can have that conversation and understand to make that first one smoother for you, where it's not unusual to have a conversation with the CEO who can understand you and what you're doing. And build it from there. And it's that builds a much more relationship focused transaction than simply we're giving you money. If you don't, if you don't pay it back, we take all your stuff.
Yeah.
So they tend to focus on that big picture. What's good for everybody.
Yeah. Softened the scary side of things sometimes. And, you know, our business is obviously a relationship business. There's no doubt in that. What's different about getting funding, I guess, specifically from a credit union when it comes to like the, I'm just curious because I genuinely don't know, from an underwriting process or an approval process? Is it similar to a bank or is it different, or does it depend on the, depends on the credit union, I'm assuming, or what does that kind of look like?
Yeah, generally what your financials are financials. If you looked at a credit review package from a credit union compared to a bank, we're going to look at a lot of the same things. And if it's a large, complex, sophisticated deal, we do that. If it's your first time deal and you're just getting involved and maybe you have a full-time job, we do that. So from a financial perspective, I'm sorry to say it's pretty homogenous type of product. Mm-hmm. You know, we're regulated. The banks are regulated. We all have to show that we're going to give you the money and that you can pay it back. What's different in that process is maybe some of the questions we'll ask, because many times deals aren't cut and dry. Many times we're going to want to know the story of what you're doing and who you are, but more importantly, where you want to go, because we want to be able to help you now in the future, but also for your complete financial relationship. So you may experience that first deal or two. You might say, wow, these are a lot of questions. Well, because it's not just a transaction that we're looking at in terms of that cut and dry scenario.
This is a tough question. When it comes to a lender standpoint on the other side, what's more important typically, the financial strength or the individual themselves?
I always say without that person behind the deal having an understanding of that person, the financials to me don't matter as much. I want to know who I'm working with. I want to know what's the story behind you. I want to know that when I request updated financial information and need updated insurance policies, you're not going to scream at me and you're going to be cooperative and we're going to have a smooth relationship. Because we're not, like we said, we're not just looking at this loan, we're looking at the next loan and to be part of the portfolio. And really, as I mentioned, you're going to be part of the cooperative. You're going to contribute to the cooperative or you're going to be a detriment to the cooperative. So really we have, and I hate to say it, but as somebody who lends money, there's that sliding scale. If you're kind of a jerk and a pain to deal with, you know, as the more sophisticated and the better your financials are, we're able to put up with a little bit more. But overall, we do want that person behind it. Because also, you know, most real estate investors know other real estate investors, and most people kind of hang out with people who would like them. So if we have a good borrower, hopefully we can work with you, your friends, and your business contacts.
Yeah, that's what, and I really appreciate you giving me a good answer on that, because That's what I tell people all the time, and really all aspects of commercial real estate. People invest in the person more than anything. And you know, it's kind of reassuring to hear that even lenders view that in the same light. Is there any regulation difference between a credit union and a bank?
So one of the keys is the first thing people ask about is my money, if you have accounts there, is my money insured? Mm-hmm. Your money is insured by the federal government of the United States with the exact same backing as it is a bank or a credit union. We have what's called the National Credit Union Share Insurance Fund. The banks have the FDIC. There is absolutely no substantive difference between the two. The differences in regulations as far as what we can do and what we cannot do are very negligible. It's more about the capital accounts. The balance sheets of credit unions and banks look very different. And that's something to and in this case, in the environment that we're in now, it's actually much more favorable to a credit union. And what I mean by that is banks tend to leverage their deposits. They tend to borrow a lot of money. They're borrowing their money, lending it to you, and they're making a difference. And that's one of the reasons why banks really need to charge a prepayment penalty in many cases, is because of that, where virtually every credit union in America, it's lending out the deposits of the members of the local institution.
Got it.
So it's not locked into a borrowing base where they funded your $10 million loan by borrowing $10 million and they're on the hook for.
Yeah.
Credit unions' cost of capital compared to a bank to lend out on the commercial side is significantly lower. So that's where it becomes a benefit when in a rising rate market like we're in today, the credit union's costs are rising, but not at near the pace of other types of lenders.
Interesting. So let's dive into that a little bit now that we kind of have an understanding and background on credit unions. So obviously you mentioned it a couple times now that we're in a rising rate environment. You know, I just got back from an ICSC convention, which is a big retail real estate convention. And obviously the word recession is being thrown around everywhere. And, you know, obviously the indicators are there. I'm curious, what are credit unions doing right now to limit the exposure to any upcoming recession? I guess what lessons were learned from the last 08 financial crisis? What's kind of different this time from a lending standpoint? Can you give us some color on that?
Sure. One of the big items from a lender standpoint that has taken effect is some of the different capital requirements that go into effect, so that lenders in general are really reserving much more and have to hold more capital. And from a credit union perspective, that's gone from 7% as the minimum up to most credit unions are at around 9%. So they're having to hold more capital. And the big impact which worries me is the upcoming CECL regulations, which get into how much allowance for bad loans credit unions have to take on. You know, it used to be you looked at up until a few months, up even today, and it's going to change at the end of the year. Credit unions would look at their loans today. They would make a judgment on to how much they need to reserve based off of today. Well, now when you make a loan, you're going to have to make an allowance for all the loans the day you make the loan for the life of the loan. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be putting more and more lenders, putting more and more lenders out there in terms of holding more capital, holding more pieces for bad loss reserve. Now, one of the nice pieces about credit unions is credit unions have very diverse portfolios. So generally you're going to be looking at a credit union that maybe maxes out at 10 to 15% of their assets in commercial loans. And it has a portfolio of credit cards, mortgages, car loans, and it's diverse across several different asset categories. Mm-hmm. Whereas a bank may be 90% into commercial loans and small business loans into in a particular marketplace, which really puts into their concentration a lot more.
So what is the temperature right now with credit unions as far as deals in general?
So last year, the credit union industry did about $42 billion in commercial loans. And most of that was pretty heavily concentrated in the commercial real estate. We budgeted this year a really softening of the market. And what's happened is we haven't slowed down and we're actually ahead of last year's numbers, even in the rising interest rate market.
So strange.
And we really find, you know, I hate to say sometimes commercial lenders can get a little lazy, but they can get a little lazy. And the last few years, there was so much money in the marketplace and rates were so low and everything was so positive. People just put out loans left and right. Now, what you're seeing is you're having to go back and do a little bit more work today to put out the money, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. But we are seeing our volumes actually increase. And part of that is the liquidity of credit unions has the money in there in the marketplace. We tend not to jump in and out of businesses and portfolio types as much as some of the banks. So we're credit unions are very much in the marketplace. They still have money. They're still looking to lend and they're doing it at good margins. Now, the difference this year is we're really digging into to making sure we understand that property on a micro level and a much more of a macro level too. You may have tenants in there now if it's an office building, but we want to go in and say, if you go visit the headquarters of MBFS right now, there's zero people in there. We've really virtualized the company and our office is kind of a big paperweight.
Yeah, interesting.
So when we look at a deal, we want to know what's it look like today? Because if that office is really empty, when those come up for renewal, the odds are that's going to get shrunk back a lot or canceled. So we're really doing a much more of a deeper dive into that piece. Now, some markets like the warehouse business, you can't get enough of it here. We're in the Northeast Corridor and the center of the universe for a lot of interstates. And it's still going strong because of a lot of shifts to online businesses and warehouses and shrunk down. But we also have many clients in the Southeast United States. And most U-Hauls are going from New York and New Jersey to Florida and not the other way. So even though some of the markets may be softening, some industry areas of the country are booming. So we're looking at what's going on that particular property, but also the macro environment. And a lot more detailed.
What metrics do you look at specifically with that? Do you look at growth rates or income growth, just population growth? What metrics specifically?
Me personally, some of the ones that I look at are to fill up your properties and to, if you're a retail, to spend money there, you need people and you need people with jobs. So, you know, I grew up in the coal region of Pennsylvania, where there's a lot less people with a lot less money than when I grew up. So those properties still can take a hit, and there's no turnaround anytime soon on those. So to me, I'm looking at population, I'm looking at visitors trends, where people are traveling to, and you know, in New York City, which is, you know, an hour and a half from me, there's still pullback into visitors because people get worried about COVID restrictions and what can I do and what can I do. So they're going to more open places or places where they can, they know they're not going to get pulled back on restrictions when they're there. But we look at jobs, we look at shifts in the economy, who the major employers are in an area, because it, you know, in some areas of Alabama that we look at, there's large auto plants and some large manufacturers that you may not have in areas of the country. Well, these aren't coming and going, right? These aren't leaving anytime soon. They're pretty stable environments. So those are just some of the pieces that we'll look at to lend into.
Interesting.
Yeah. We did a deal. It was the middle of 2020, and we did a hotel loan, and I flipped the table and said, "What are we, nuts? What are we doing a hotel loan for?" And they said, "No, it's in Huntsville, Alabama." Well, it was wide open. Huntsville, Alabama is about as booming of an economy as you get. And these hotels never missed a beat. The more I investigated, I said, okay, let's do it. And it's, the loans are poor performing and the properties are great, performing spectacularly.
Awesome. Where are credit unions most pessimistic right now?
Sure. They probably get most nervous in some of the ground up construction that I see. Just because if you're building homes, they would love to build homes in some developments, but it seems like you can't build the homes for the cost that you need to with labor and supplies. Yeah. And they get very worried about that from the execution point. But also if it's office buildings or warehouses, you know, who knows what that's going to be like when, by the time it actually gets up and running. So I would say the ground up construction projects are really where I see the most hesitation today, just because you don't know what's going to be happening in the shifts in some of these markets with regards to jobs and spaces and offices, and even the retail environment.
Well, and I was going to say, just to add on to that, I mean, it's, you know, I'm involved in a couple of transactions right now, and, you know, it's been 6 months and the budget's changed 3 times because of supplies, and just the logistics of getting a ground up project done right now is just tremendously complicated and cumbersome and difficult compared to 2 years ago. And, you know, it's interesting. I always find this fascinating when I talk to lenders, because, you know, it makes you appreciate the relationship between the lender and the borrower, because it, you know, you're really partners in the project and you both got to be comfortable. And, you know, the same issues that are bugging you are more than likely going to be amplified when you're talking to your lender. So it's interesting to hear you say, you know, not necessarily an asset class, but a type of real estate, which is ground up construction, is, you know, there's some hesitancy there, and that's because there's just so many moving parts right now when it comes to either harder entitlement processes or, again, supply chain issues, labor to actually, to your point, execute and get the project built. All those factors play into a ground up project. So I can definitely understand that and see your perspective on that.
Yeah, that's why, you know, from the credit union side, we think the housing market in terms of values will stay pretty solid for an extended period of time, because how many of us know somebody who can't find who wants to buy a house or wants to move, but just can't? And I think until a lot of this supply chain, labor issues, costs stabilize out, that's not going to change, because if you're a builder, if you're even a homeowner wanting to build a house, good luck finding somebody, and then finding somebody at the prices that makes sense to you. So the housing market is really frozen, and as a result, we that's why we see the rents in multifamily continuing to climb and climb and climb. Even the rental markets are just very, very tight.
So is there any global conversations within your network as far as when their crystal ball prediction is on when supply chain and everything will kind of level out?
We've really said if we could figure it out, we probably wouldn't be sitting in the rooms talking about it. It's become such a macro issue. And even among our small business clients, we just had somebody who needed some relief from payments. They have a really nice business, but most of their supplies and suppliers came through Shanghai, China. So that was just frozen and they can't get the goods that they need. They have a nice business, they have good management, but they can't get the goods to sell it through. And some of that we just can't predict. So we're really taking that cautious approach and saying that we can't predict it or we don't know. So what do we do know? And let's price for it accordingly. And we think ultimately somebody who's a good business operator, somebody who knows what they're doing and runs projects well and runs in good leverage ratios, this'll, you know, they might have a tough time, but it'll all level out at some point in the future. When that is, boy, we know. And what I would really tell your folks is that if they're in a project and your costs are rising and the margins are tighter, definitely have the conversations with your lender before the delinquency side and keep up with them, because it's much, much easier to work with a borrower when it's just delinquent or when we're anticipating having some issues than when we get into a serious delinquency issue. So, because we're watching that, we're keeping a close eye on it. And in our organizations, we you know, obviously we want everything to be rosy all the time, as do our borrowers, but that's not the case. And people just need to have those good conversations and proactive conversations, because, you know, like you said, you know, you owe somebody $10,000, you're a customer, you owe somebody $10 million, you're a partner. So, you know, we want everybody to succeed.
Yeah, well stated, and definitely a good tip. Give us some feedback, and again, crystal ball prediction, but you're obviously closer to it as it relates to interest rates. And, you know, just your real forecast for the next year and a half to 2 years when it comes to, you know, the Fed, and, you know, obviously no one can accurately predict the future, but, you know, you guys obviously have to have a pretty good, you know, tap on that. What's kind of your prediction?
Yeah, we really think deep into the fall, we're going to see interest rates on that steady 50 basis points climb, maybe 25 basis points climb. You know, inflation by its nature will flatten out at some point later on in the year. And it won't be a deflationary environment, but prices skyrocketed and they're high. Well, they measure it from a year ago, and it's still going to be high at the end of the year, but it's just not going to have inflated from the previous year. So we think by default, you're going to see that how they measure inflation, you're going to see that soften, but you're not going to see prices come down with people. And with that interest rate will flatten out much more, where maybe that prime rate is into 6.25 and 6.5. And then it'll be much more of a flat environment. We're going to see credit lending institutions are going to have to raise funds. They're going to have to increase their rates, and they do it a little bit slower and lagging. But for those institutions that borrow funds are in tight liquidity, their margins are going to shrink quite a bit. So we think we're going to see that continual raising rate environment at least probably through this year. What that number could out, it could be maybe that a total of 3 basis points throughout the course of the year, gone up maybe into 3.5 and then softening down. But, you know, inflation, you know, everybody thinks inflation is going to stop, and I think it's going to come down, but we don't think prices overall are going to come down. We don't think the cost of labor is going to come down. We think it's over time, really these higher costs are just going to be baked into what we all do.
There's some people that may cry hearing that, but it's just the reality of things.
I really, if you think about it, for some of these costs to come down, what has to happen is labor has to come down in price. And if you really look at the United States from a macro standpoint, as far as our population, I have kids in high school, and the sizes of that teenage high school population and the college age, that population is decreasing in size. We don't have a strong environment where we're bringing in a lot of immigrants to fill those gaps. So really, to lower that inflation and to lower the cost, we're going to have to lower labor. And we just don't think politically there's the appetite for companies to go out and say, you know, all that money that we had to pay you to get more, well, we're going to lower it. And, you know, my 17-year-old son, he got his first job working at a grocery store. I mean, he's probably worth $4 an hour as an employee, but his first job, he got $11 an hour in high school.
Yeah.
And the local stores and, you know, Chick-fil-A's at $19 an hour here locally. Yeah. Well, that we just don't see that coming backwards.
Yeah. Once you giveth, you can't taketh back.
It's pretty hard to go backwards on that. Now, raises may flatten. You know, people may not be getting the raises that they thought, or those 10% or a couple dollar an hour increases at a time. But we think these higher costs are baked in with few exceptions.
Not that it's a topic that anyone likes to talk about, but I am curious, from your level, in the event of a recession coming up, where are you guys sensing the most defaults and casualties?
We think your first line of defense, your first line is where you're going to see it the most, is in your small business market. They, you know, your average small business, they have smaller employees, they have less capital, and they're really working week by week. And you'll also see it the most in some of the luxury goods and some of the businesses that popped the most during the pandemic will be the first one to come back to earth.
So would that be like the tourism, Airbnb, that type of, like, specifically, or what are you thinking?
Yeah, you know, and I'll give you a good example would be maybe that IT sector. You know, many IT companies and technology companies, and you're already seeing it in some of these fintechs that had astronomical growth and astronomical hiring. Every day we're seeing the pullbacks in labor and pullback. You know, the obvious ones that you had growth in a lot of these tech companies, and now they're pulling back employee base because what they had just was not sustainable. So IT spending the last few years skyrocketed. Well, that may not be needed anymore. You know, but you know, there'll be some of the businesses, you know, people will still go to gyms, they'll still go to the restaurants, but they may not go to, I find myself going out to eat, but we're not going out to the most expensive restaurants that we did before. You know, I love to collect sports collectibles. You know, that kind of got slashed a little bit as a discretionary expense as inflation ramps up. So some of those optional things in your life are the first things that people cut, but the basic nuts and bolts, you know, that we need to pay for our family and do on a monthly basis, they're pretty stable. You know, the good thing is employment. We think unemployment will still be low. So we think jobs will be there, but in a softer recessionary environment, those discretionary types of expenses, some of the luxury goods will get pulled back. Some of the pandemic darlings sectors where people, their business really took off and they built an infrastructure and might not be needed as much as you think anymore.
Not that it's related to commercial real estate per se, but it's just so abundantly wacky right now. I'd love to hear your opinion really quick on the used car market. Obviously, sure. Since that's such an indicator of an inflationary indicator, how do you see that one landing and turning out in the next couple, you know, months to a year?
The months to the year, we think we really project nothing is going to change.
Interesting.
And part of that is when we look at a dealership, they are making more money than they ever have been in their entire life. Much of this chip shortage was self-created by the new auto industry and the rental cars market of canceling orders because they thought there was going to be this massive decline in cars. Well, there wasn't. We had a few months where things really stunk and the rest of the world opened. And then we had massive government stimulus that everybody was made whole, plus some in many cases. And people wanted to buy a car and there wasn't. So we don't see any disruption going on in the auto market. What we're seeing in the credit union sector is that the number of cars being financed is shrinking, but the average loan size is increasing. As you can imagine, people are spending an astronomical amount. So those are the types of things that really dig into people's wallet in terms of they're having to spend more to buy a car or more to get it fixed. They need it. They need a car to go to work, and that chews into other discretionary types of pieces that you have. You know, and from the commercial real estate side, you know, a lot of people look at it as my tenant. I have tenants and they pay me, especially if they're small businesses or small offices. Well, those retail, if people don't have the discretionary income to come into your tenant small businesses and spend there, you could end up with some empty space. So we think that whisper down the lane impact will hit some of the weaker small businesses in certain types of discretionary markets. If you have an apartment building, people need a place to live. People need a car to drive to work. You know, those are the types of segments, but they might not need to go out for frozen yogurt.
Again, it goes back to the essential versus non-essential type of conversation. Yes. When it comes to goods and services. Well, that's great. Well, I guess just one more question as we kind of wrap up here, and this has been a great conversation. So thanks again for your time. Whether you're an experienced borrower or a new borrower, when you're approaching a credit union for a potential project or commercial real estate investment, what are the best practices from a borrower standpoint to prepare for that conversation? What specifically are credit unions going to look at, and how can you as a borrower, you know, paint that picture for them? And just like to get some detail again on what they look at specifically. Sure. Just to help out any audience members out there that could be potentially looking to get a loan.
Sure. And the first thing that I always tell people is if they have a list that of documents that they need and they provide you that list or give you that list, give them everything on the list. If they have a list of 10 items and you give them 8, your deal's going to get held up because there's a reason those last 2 items on the list. Even if you think, that's kind of silly, they probably don't need that. Trust me, they need it. That's why it's on the list. So you're really going to find a much more efficient, effective process. And the other piece is making sure that they're going to want to understand you, but they're also going to want to understand that loan. And if there's any hair on the transaction, if there's some rough parts, in your past personally, address those up front and let people know. We always say there's events and then there's trends, and bad events happen to people. And if 5 years ago you got into an auto accident and had some medical problems and you couldn't handle things as well during that time, but it's been good since, let people know. And it's much easier to address that on the front end then once they start digging in, they dig in more and more and more. So be organized. They have to understand how they're going to get the money back. And the clearer that you can make that, it's a win-win for everybody. But that's probably the first thing that people get frustrated at is, and you've probably seen those lists where a lender says, great, here's what we need. And somebody just says, I can get you this and it's close enough. No, it's not close enough. Just follow it and you will be much happier in the process.
Yeah, that was always one of my best pieces of business advice is just face your demons up front, you know, get everything out on the table. And, you know, it'll just make the process that much smoother. No one really likes surprises, especially lenders. That's for sure.
Exactly. Most lenders are lousy real estate investors, and that's why they're lenders.
So. Yeah, no doubt. Well, this has been fantastic, Mark. Thanks so much for, again, spending time with us today, giving some insights, obviously background on, you know, credit unions and, you know, how they underwrite deals and how they really work. And also, you know, just speaking to the current environment that we're in and the environment that we could be heading into here in the next couple of months. So we will post your contact information on our website when this show goes live. But again, thanks so much for being here today. We greatly appreciate it.
Enjoyed it. Thanks for having me.
Hey, listeners, thank you so much for joining us today. If you feel someone within your network would benefit and learn from this podcast, please feel free to share this or any other episode with them. If you feel you have benefited from this podcast, please leave us a review on any platform where you listen to podcasts. We greatly appreciate your support and feedback, and we look forward to connecting with you on the next show. Until then, stay healthy, stay safe, stay educated.